Welcome to Allegedly. I'm Theo Vaughn.
And I'm Matthew Cole Weiss. And today we have an awesome guest, Mr. Mark McGrath.
Yay.
What's up, fellas? Mark.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations to Dennis Quaid, Jerry O'Connell, and now you're slumming with me. I apologize.
No, not at all. We have Mark because I interviewed you at the at a benefit concert where you performed with the likes of, who was it? It was Dave Navarro, and it was Billy Idol was up there. And
Billy Gibbons, I believe,
from ZZ Top, and it was just Duff McKagan was up there from Guns N' Roses. Awesome.
That's right.
And Juliette Lewis was there.
And she, did you see her rip down the house? She's amazing.
She was amazing. She sang that Tina Turner song,
Proud Mary.
She killed it.
She's like a female Iggy Pop.
Anyway, and so Mark was kind enough to come in and do this for us.
And Matt, we've got a long history. I've known you forever, going back to Extra and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And Matt was really very gracious in my acclimation over there at Extra, coming from the stage to the smaller stage. And it took me a while, but everybody there was so comforting. And the whole TMZ family was great to me.
Awesome,
and,
Matt.
So you were part of that.
Allegedly, the podcast, it's the world's only competitive podcast where Theo and I will compete in three rounds. You serve as the celebrity judge and the celebrity interview in round two.
Nice.
So the first round is Theo and I each have a couple minutes to tell a story about something that's happened to us in Hollywood or in our lives.
Okay.
And then at the end, you get to pick which one you think wins that round. Second round, we'll take turns interviewing you, asking questions. Third round, we have a topic for debate, and you pick the winner of the podcast.
Sounds simple enough. Even for me, I can understand that.
There you go. And it's a share concept. Like, you can, like, the first round is sharing, so we could be sharing whatever it is. We each have 5 minutes. And
is it the most compelling story, or is it, like, the most interesting story?
It's up to you.
It's up to me.
Because our lives, one thing Matt and I have in common, we both hit rock bottom constantly. We've always been there for each other. We're totally different. Matt believes in dating men and Judaism.
Right.
And I believe in the correct pathway to heaven and dating women for now. Maybe later I'll switch, but for now.
Yeah, that's great, though. You can meet at the table. And how did you guys meet? You probably said it a million times.
No, I don't know if we ever. He came to my birthday party like 10 years ago, and I was like, who's this guy? And I probably hit on you.
Wait, who's this hot guy? Right?
Yeah, I was probably a good-looking guy.
This is a lot of fans of Theo.
Story of my life. But then we, I don't know, we just struck a friendship that... Yeah. Is based on common anxieties and neuroses.
And that's
about it.
And Matt comes from an interviewing background, and I do stand-up as well. I have a Netflix special coming out February 26th.
February 26th,
right?
Netflix
on,
original.
Congratulations.
So
look forward to seeing that, Theo.
Thank you, Mark.
Man.
We appreciate it. We're going to start round one. Matt is going to go first.
All right. My story that I picked today, I'm picking because it involves a musician.
Okay.
Now, Mark, you are a musician. You were in one of my favorite bands, Sugar Ray.
Very kind.
And this involves my favorite musician, I think, of all time, who is Elton John.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Elton John, I think, as a songwriter, as a performer, as a person, is probably up there, is even more for me than Michael Jackson, than anyway. Anyway, so I have people that I want to meet. You know, you come to Hollywood and there's like top five that you want to meet. Elton John's on my list. So I get invited to this premiere. It was an animated movie that he produced called Romeo and Juliet, right?
Mm.
Of course, I'm not meeting him at like the cool rock star show or whatever. I'm meeting him at this kid's premiere, Romeo and Juliet. And as I have a tendency to do, I brought a young man who I had just met, who was very handsome and who I was trying to impress. Mm-hmm. And
That'll do it. I'm not even gay, and that would do it, bro.
I would be gay.
Nobody knew that he was even going to be there. And then after the premiere was done, the screen lifted, and he was there, and he played some of his songs like Crocodile Rock and whatnot. It was really cool.
So I
just brought this guy because I was impressing him with Hollywood. I didn't even know Elton John was going to be there. So we're at the party afterwards, which, by the way, this is a kid's movie. So it's like juice boxes, mm-hmm. and like you can't even drink alcohol because it's for kids. I see Elton John, and I'm like, this is my moment. You know, this is what I'm going to do. And by the way, he's wearing these 3D Romeo and Juliet glasses, by the way, which couldn't be my picture that I got with him has him wearing his Romeo and Juliet glasses, which couldn't be any less cool. So I go up to him and I said, Mr. John, I'm a huge fan. You know, I think you've been in kind of idol musically, but also, you know, personally and all that. And I was wondering if there's any way I could get a picture. And he goes, wow, you're cute.
Whoa.
And I was like,
what?
I said, oh, thank you. And he says, come here. And so we took the picture, right? So this guy I'm with.
I thought he meant actually come here. Like, I want you to. I didn't mean that. Okay.
He led with it.
Well, exactly.
And you called him Mr. John. I don't think he's ever been called that before in his life.
I know, that's true.
And you got a David Furnish sensibility about you, and that's his husband.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So everything's working.
I felt, we took the pictures, great picture. I felt on cloud fucking nine.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so the guy I'm with, who I'd only met once before, who I took to this date, who's very handsome, he says, oh, I want a picture, right? And so he comes over and he goes, Mr. John, can I get a picture too? And Elton goes, absolutely. You're even cuter than him.
What a whore. Listen to Elton John.
I felt this big.
Wow.
Because at first I was like, oh, he thinks he's cute. And then I'm like, that's a whore. That's like a backhanded. Like, that's all. He just said that this guy, and granted, the guy probably was better looking than I am.
But you said, he still said you were cute too, so he's qualified.
I know. So I, mean, I don't know how to feel about
boat.
That. I don't know how, I didn't know how to feel. I remember in the moment going,
you should say, well, I'm hitting the gym soon. Or
well, now, let me ask you a question. Like, if a girl comes to me and says you're cute, and I say you're cute too, things are going to happen.
Right.
They would have before I was married.
Right.
Why didn't something go down? I mean, Elton's down. I mean, you know, the gay lifestyle, a little free-flowing.
I don't think I could even do it, to be honest.
What?
I don't think I could.
Dude, he'd start playing Somebody Save My Life Tonight, and you'd be...
You're right.
Strapped, dude.
Butterflies.
I would be.
And I'm like blowing him as he's... Yeah,
you'd be a candle in the wind, brother. You would be in a second, man.
So I distinctly remember he then continued to talk to this guy for a little while I stood on the outside, and I was just like, welcome to Hollywood, bitches. You know, like, this is what it is, and that was it.
Cuckolded by Elton John, man.
Wow, yes, dude. And so I never saw the guy again.
Did he ever hook up with Elton?
I have no idea.
What? This may affect my decision on the story, too. What happened with you and the date you brought? What happened that night? Fireworks, Elton John?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Wow. Nothing.
That's going to have a real play in my decision.
Okay.
I love that, dude. Ooh, then this helps, okay? Ironically, our stories always sometimes have a little bit of a theme, and this one, mine has some mild homosexuality in it, okay?
Mild. We got to put a warning out there. Warning, people. This story contains mild homosexuality. Cover your children's ears.
Okay, so one time I played in a poker tournament at some weird casino. Like, I'm sure working in the entertainment business, sometimes they like fly you out for certain events.
Played them all.
Golf events, yeah.
Every Indian casino, everyone.
Yes. Pechanga, Foxwoods, been them all.
Even Commerce.
Gotcha.
See, a Commerce casino.
So this one was someplace called Firelight Grand Casino. It was in Oklahoma somewhere. And like Jerry Mathers was there. And I actually remember asking Jerry, and I told the story before, but I'll just read this one line. I said, Jerry, you know, I live in Santa Monica. And he goes, and I grew up a huge Jerry Mathers fan. I had pictures of him on my wall. And he's
too
like,
young.
I know, but I just loved that Nick at Night. I just loved those shows.
He loves Little House on the Prairie. That is
true.
His jam. No,
Michael Landon, if we could dig him up, I would.
I'll do a full house marathon all day. I'm not kidding.
Would you blow Michael Landon?
Bro, no, dude.
Oh, okay.
But his son maybe has a chance.
You gotta go there, Matt, right? His son. Can't just be a fan of a man. You know?
His son is a gorgeous gay man.
Is he?
Yep.
Wow.
Chris Landon.
Ugh.
Go ahead.
Anyway.
I'm not Chris Landon. Forgive me. Sorry.
Yeah, no. So what was I talking about?
Jerry Mathers.
Oh, yeah. So I said, I live in, he goes, where do you live? And I said, Santa Monica. He goes, I used to get some pussy in Santa Monica.
Come on.
I swear to God, that's what he said. Yeah. And it made and destroyed my entire life. But anyway, so at this event, we go out to, at night, they took us on a party bus into Oklahoma City, which isn't the amazingest place to party, but they take us in. There's one black guy on the bus, right? On the way back. A buddy of mine named Jervis. He was on a show
Survivor.
Called Survivor, right?
Yeah,
on the first
Jervis.
One.
Yeah,
nice yeah amazing, super funny guy. On the way back, is he really?
Yeah.
On the way back from being out in the city, the party bus drivers were like these white, like really Oakland homing kind of people, right? And Jervis was kind of flirting, I guess, with the guy's wife or this girl who was sitting up by the front. He didn't realize it was the driver's wife, dude.
Yikes.
So at one point, the driver's like pulls over. It's like 2 a.m. at a gas station, and there was like 60 miles between Oklahoma City and where this casino was.
And is it just you two, or there's other people
there's
on the bus?
There's a bunch of people on the bus.
Other reality stars and stuff on the bus.
There's reality stars. There's everybody. There's Jerry Mathers. There's like people from like all types of shows, right?
Wow.
So they
living on that bus, man. Everybody's wasted.
Yeah, it was awesome. They had one girl in the back of the bus who I don't even know if she was a prostitute or what, but she was like performing favors if you felt like going
Come
to the back
on.
Of the bus.
Wow.
I swear, bro.
I wonder if that bus got in an accident, who would get the top billing? Jerry Mathers
yeah, right.
or you?
So we go
CNN banner, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the next, so so
I want to stop you. I've been on a lot of buses and stuff, and no one's blowing anybody in the back of any bus. What are you talking
about?
There was
a Vietnamese girl back there. I don't
do that?
None of us did. We didn't even put in on it. So
it might be the cool thing.
I don't know what. And I probably got a quarter of a hand job because I was nervous. I was like, who is this girl?
That's stressful.
Is this somebody's like
just a plant?
Yeah, I would get like kind of started and then be like, I don't know if this is even legal. So anyway, what happened was this guy gets offended, I guess, that Jervis is hitting on his girlfriend.
Fair enough.
As one is wont to do.
100%. But he starts going the racial, right? Drops some racial slurs. Jervis says some things back. There's another girl in the back who gets in a fight with someone on the bus. Beer bottles start getting thrown around. Next thing you know, we all get dropped off at a gas station.
Dropped off at a gas station.
Boots right?
Everybody out?
Everybody out. Peace
out. Is Mather still there? Is he still hanging?
Lisa's his girlfriend. Yeah, we're all sitting out there. And Hal Mao, whatever that guy's name was.
Ralph Mao?
Ralph Mao.
Hal Mao.
Yeah, I didn't know his name.
How did you get Ralph Mao out of Hal Mao?
Because I know him. That's the thing. I know
so we're
him.
We're stuck at this gas station, right? So, and one of the guys that actually ended up kind of punching a girl that was on the bus, right?
Was this independent of the Gervais argument?
But that started. Like that, that
all
energy.
Instigated.
Yes, a lot of booze and everything. That instigated a lot of just. So next thing you know, we're all standing at a gas station. The guy that had hit the girl runs across the interstate to another gas station and literally climbs into a dumpster, right? To hide. Not even joking. So next thing you know, the police get called. There's like 40 of us outside, or like maybe about 20 of us outside of a gas station in the middle of nowhere. It's 2 a.m. The police get called and they're like, well, what did the guy look like, right? They're looking for, because the girl's crying, the guy hit or whatever. She's a tough girl. She hit back, right? Uh-huh. And not saying it's never right to hit a woman, but she hit back. It was, you know, they were both drunk. So next thing you know, the police are like, well, where is the guy? You know, we can't deal with this. And then I was like, you know, honestly, sir, I think the guy's homosexual, you know? And they're like, would you say, buddy? And I was like, I'll be honest, sir, I think he's homosexual, you know?
Why did you say that?
Because then the cops were like, we got to find this guy.
Oh,
right?
God.
So they leave literally, and you can hear the guy, we got a fella who might be in the fellas as he's talking into his.
Come on, dude.
I'm not even joking.
1952? I mean, Oklahoma City's not maybe the most sophisticated, with all due respect, I've been there to people, but are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding. It's rural Oklahoma, right? So next thing you know, cabs come pick us up. They drop us all off back at this motel or wherever, say this Holiday Inn out by this casino. In the morning, we all get into a limo to take us all to the airport. That was the last big night, right? And I get into the limo. The guy who had hit the girl or gotten a fight in the girl is in the limo. He's kind of scratched up. I pull in with me the girl. I end up making love with the girl who'd gotten in the fist fight with the guy. She's in the limo. We're all going to the airport together. She doesn't even live by the airport.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, that's just... A story
but they
happened.
Found the guy in the dumpster
on the road. It was my friend. It was actually my buddy, and that's one of the reasons why I threw out, like, you know, I had to find something that was going to lure these guys away. And we already had like Jervis. Like they weren't going to like go looking for a black guy. Like we had Jervis. He was a friend. I had to find the next closest thing that I thought would get these rural guys fired up and just dropping the H card.
All right, Mark, the onus falls on your shoulders right now.
Well, both very compelling and interesting, both dynamic in their own way.
Yes, thank you.
Matt's, yours, always the celebrity component, is intriguing, and Elton John is a hero of mine as well. But the shenanigans and chicanery going on in Theo's story, I'm still confused by what happened.
I'm very confused
also,
as well.
Also, he's not naming names because he knows who's hitting girls. You know
right.
who's on there.
Yeah,
so I'm actually going to subtract a point.
Yes.
Wow. Because, you know, if you're going to tell a story like that, you got to come correct and clean. This is a podcast. We're in the nest here.
Okay.
When we're sharing, it's got to be truthful.
Okay.
So I just switched my own vote mid-switch.
Yes.
I was going to go for Theo, and now I'm going to give Matt the win for telling the truth.
Wow.
On that one. No, very compelling story, but you left out some interesting tidbits that would have wrapped it up for me. It's going to go to
awesome.
I
can wrap
it.
Up my story. By the way, the guy that I went on the date with that was there later told me he was available for daddies, meaning if someone paid for him, he would be in a relationship.
He was a sugar daddy.
He was looking for
a sugar daddy, and I think he thought, because I was on TMZ at the time and had the money, that I would have been the sugar daddy.
Wow. Well, how much younger was he than you? You certainly don't fit the... Well, I guess I'm old now, so...
I'm 36. He was in his early 20s, probably.
37 with a bullet. wait, is there a lot of sugar daddery going on in
Absolutely.
West
I went to a party on Saturday that Bruce Valanche took me to, and it was three categories. It was one, old men, two, the young twinks, freaks that are with the old men, and three, this gay West Hollywood social thing, which I don't fit into any of those. I felt so uncomfortable. But you see these older men who are obviously wealthy with these guys, these young, hot, built guys, and you're like, all right, I got that number.
Right.
And so part of me is like, all right, you know, at least I have that. If I get older, I can always hopefully get some money so I can do that.
Well, Matt took me to one of these parties one time, and there's a hot chick there, and I'm like, oh, I'm nervous to talk to her. Matt's like, the only time you have a chance with this chick is right now.
Right.
Everybody else here is gay.
This was the party where Theo was going, where are the twinks? Where are the twinks? He's screaming at the top of his lungs.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
This is not appropriate because this was kind of a classy party.
Neil Patrick Harris laughed.
Neil Patrick Harris laughed. Okay. So
the chick thought she was safe, too, and then Theo walks in.
No, exactly.
Then I dated her for a while. So it was Joe Jonas' ex-girlfriend, and ended up dating her for a while. And the guy who actually got in a fist fight with the woman, I'll bring it up, Mike Boogie. Very familiar to
Boogie?
TMZ.
Yeah. I know him.
Boogie. Yeah, yeah.
Mike, wow. How dare you? Okay, well, now I'm switching my
I don't
back.
Know.
Yes! He came clean with the trial.
Too
That's
late.
All I
too late.
My story.
No, it's never too late.
Is it too late?
No.
It's the judges. All right.
Can I give you half a point each? Because I'm really conflicted.
Okay, you can split it down the middle.
We can split it down the middle, and then we'll go to the next round. So our next round is our interview segment, and which we'll take turns asking you questions.
Great.
I'm going to kick it off. And I'm going to start, and I'm going to change moods because I know where you're going after this today.
Yeah, well, I don't want that to be a factor, but I appreciate that.
Right. But that's okay. So
you could talk about it.
But I do want to talk about this because this is news right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you were in a band in the '90s at Sugar Ray, as was Scott Weiland in Stone Temple Pilots.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have performed with him numerous times. His death. Actually, it was shocking, but at the same time, like as you said, his wife came out and said, "Don't be too shocked. He was a drug addict."
Listen, he was a friend of mine. I wasn't shocked.
Yeah,
you were.
I've ran into him a few times, and he admitted it too. He was drinking still. He was casually drinking and drinking as well. And he was. I'm not really disclosing anything. He was forthright about that. So
yeah,
I think being an addict and having these compulsions. I mean, drinking's just not part of the game. You're either sober or you're not. And I think it's just this pathway. And you kind of see that with Scott. You
and
know, I saw it slowly.
Yeah, you'd be like, I'm just going to have some wine. And people always.
Wine, a few wines. Then you're moving to scotch. And next thing you know, you're like, who's holding the blow? And you know, you're doing this thing. I'm not saying Scott was doing those things.
Right.
I don't know. But in retrospect, looking back at what was found on the bus.
Yeah.
Being a guy who spent a lot of time on a bus, if I party before, someone's got a baggie, you know, might go down a little bit.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Married man with twins now.
Yeah.
But as
you're holding, you guys hold.
I can get a teener. They used to call them teeners. Remember that?
Are you kidding me? I made up that name.
As his friend, though, and as someone, did you feel helpless as you see someone who's going through this? How do you feel?
Well, it's the old cliche. You know, you can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves. And Scott was resigned to his belief. You know, his heroes were all went through their thing. And I think he was romanced by the whole idea of addiction. It always has been. He told me himself. It was more the routine of, you know, shooting up and copping and all that. He was addicted to that as well. It was the lifestyle. And all his heroes did, whether it was Iggy Pop or, you know, Johnny Thunders, you know, he was a real dynamic and true artist in all those sense. And unfortunately, sometimes that's part of the package, you know.
But then when you factor in that he's a father.
Yeah.
How does that change? And you are a father.
Yeah.
How does that change? Because there's a lot of people that don't feel sympathy because he is a father and you're leaving your children by living that lifestyle.
I do understand that, being a father, you know. And for me, there was a switch that went off the second my kids were born. Well, I'm done with that. You know, I'm just not number one anymore, and I'm not living for myself anymore. You know, and it took me a long time to realize that. I didn't have kids until I was 42.
Wow.
You know, and like, everybody knows me. I blew it out in the 20s and 30s. No one had more fun than me. I had a job where I showed up to work, and there's three cases of beer and two bottles of booze.
Right.
That's what you requested.
Well, yeah.
On the rider.
Imagine when you're a dentist's office, and you had three cases of beer there and two bottles of Jack Daniels.
Yes, right.
You know, and being the hospital and being the gracious guy, I would make sure we made sure the backstage was cleaned up before we left. When my kids were born, it was just that stuff was done for me, but I had organically gotten to a place where I'd stopped too. Actually, the job at Extra really kind of buckled me up, back in 2004 when I took that. It was every day.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest concern was it's Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea what the job was.
Right.
Like, I have to show up every day.
Right. You're like, you know, Thursday nights are kind of a
fun
night.
Thursday, Monday night. So I had my life was all Fridays. You know, I had no Sundays anywhere. There was no Sunday nights for 15 years. It was amazing. It was fun. But when I got the job at Extra, my routine started changing a little bit. But, you know, I had some fun every now and then. And then when the kids came, it was just a wrap for me. So that's for me. You know, I can't, Scott had to go through his own thing. You know, I can't put my sort of convictions onto Scott or anybody else who maybe, you know, I wouldn't want to step in the other's shoes, because I could have been this close to being maybe careless if I had children in my 20s and 30s. I don't want to judge is what I'm saying.
Right.
I understand why people do the things they do. It's just that wasn't for me. The kids really were a shining beacon of light for me, going, this is what I need to do. I'm a father first. I've done nothing in my life, and I'm a dad now, and I'm on a new journey, and that really worked for me.
And now when you go to the memorial, do you think it's going to be celebratory?
That's hard to call. You know, I don't know. I was thinking about that in the way.
Because I was thinking that too, because I assume there'll be a lot of people who've worked with them and are sad, but also celebrate the impact he had as a musician and how fucking wonderful he was.
I hope so.
As a musician.
I think they'll probably be both tones, you know, and it's interesting in that we're all, it's not surprising Scott passed. It's unfortunate. You know, I think we're all kind of still in shock.
Yeah.
You know, as anybody who dies, if you have ever had a grandmother who's old and was sick, or maybe even in a nursing home or something, it's still a shock when they die because they're gone.
Right.
Forever.
Right.
You know, you still have this image of them.
And you kind of probably remember experiences you had with him.
3 weeks ago at a buddy of ours' wedding, Donovan's wedding, right up here.
What was he like there? What was that like?
We had a few drinks, you know, and he was just a little slow, you know, and we just noticed he looked a little peaked, you know. And it was sad because I'd go, hey, Scott, what's up? And I literally sat right next to him at the wedding. I go, hey, Scott, what's up? And he'd be, and I'm moving slowly for those listening. And he'd go, hey, man. Like, it was like a delayed response. It almost was like, almost psychological more than he even was like a booze or something.
Right.
It was strange. He just was like kind of a shell of himself. I think Mary said it really well in her letter.
Yeah.
You know, but still a nice guy. And he got up and performed, and he did a couple of STP songs and a cover song and knocked everybody's socks off, you know? So the voice never left him. It's kind of like the Elvis thing.
Right.
He always had was in voice. I mean, it left him a few times in the last couple of years.
But it sounds like you saw some resignation a little bit.
A little bit.
That. Yeah.
Sadly, I think he was a shell of himself. There was a faraway look in his eyes, you know? Yeah. I just always thought he'd get it together though, for some reason. I don't know. I'm a Pisces. I'm a dreamer, you know?
Yeah. Do you say, like at that point, like, is it like, is there anything to say, or he's such his own person, you can't say like, hey man, or you know, like,
I think, Theo, when you have kids, you've been married, you know, you've had all the programs and you've had been able to afford all the, you know, the care you can possibly care. What can I say?
Right. It's not like a buddy bumping you at saying, hey.
And like, I knew Scott, we were definitely friends. And I saw him a lot, but it's not like I was just, you know, head on my shoulder crying at night. Whole, you know, I was more of a good time party guy. Hey man, I'll see you at the gig. And you know, we did a lot of shows together and stuff like that. So it was never my place to go, dude, I'm worried about you, bro. You know what I mean? I don't know if it would have been, it would have fallen on deaf ears. I think people who have ever dealt with an addict know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I have.
This isn't a young man.
Right.
Yeah. You know, this is a guy who's had every sort of treatment and center afforded to, and been to many. What, he'd gone to 16, 17?
The best in the world.
Yeah. The best in the world. And it just didn't take. And maybe the next one would have, you know. I mean, I think Mary said it best. The kids always held out hope. You know, they think the father was gone, but they always held out hope.
Kids will
hope
forever.
That's what I had for him. Yeah. You know, kids will forever.
Do you feel like... do you have a question, Matt?
Yeah, I do.
I forget everything.
Me too.
And this, you?
That's why I was staying with you. I'm like, I got you. Keep going.
And, you know, we'll find it. We'll get off the Scott
That's why I'm not working at Extra anymore.
I can imagine. Yeah, you're just sometimes just standing there with the mic like, wait, it's my turn to talk right now.
Yeah, that's what a host needs, good quality host. We'll get off of Scott after this, because this is my last question about it. But does this make you look at other people in the business or other musicians that you know who have struggled with this sort of stuff and could be going down that path? Does that make you a little more wanting to reach out to them, or do you think people will learn from this? And is there anybody else right now that you think needs to get this as a wake-up call?
Well, that's kind of a rough question. It's kind of I know the guys I know. There's new kids coming up all day. And I'm probably the oldest.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
funny. We've become a classic band. Like, you know, it's funny. I hear our songs on K-Earth, which is a classic rock
station. No, that's awesome.
At first, I'm like, how are you playing Sugar Ray next to the Beatles? First of all, somebody needs to be fired over there. But please keep doing it. Thank you. And so, like, there's a new generation of kids, and I kind of hear about it. I want to be, like, the judgment guy and the altruistic guy, because, you know, everybody knows my past. I've had some fun. You know, I just, if anybody wants to talk to me ever, I'm fortunate to have made it on the other side. You know, I still like to have a drink every now and then, but just the whole parting thing, it can get in a tornado and a downward vortex quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it just gets away from you.
Oh yeah.
If you're having fun, all of a sudden you're not having fun.
Yeah.
You're stuck in this sort of, it's the only way you know how to live. You know, right. It's crazy. You don't have to have fun anymore. You don't have to go to a party and not have a drink, you know? So you kind of had to learn to live again. But anybody in particular, Matt, I can't think of any at the top of my head, yeah. You know, but I'm always here if anybody wants to talk, you know?
Awesome.
It's a tough road, dude. And I think ultimately everything's subjective.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I think that's one thing I found out by losing friends, seeing people suffer. Everything's subjective. And you have to come to that realization on your own. I know it's the old cliche and adage, but it's true. If someone does not want help, and by the way, this goes with food, this goes with anything, that they're not going to get help.
Right.
I think bullshit. You can go through a 30-day program any day and get out the other end. But to truly make it last, it's got to be a revelation from within.
Yeah. I think truer words have never been spoken. And I think we as becoming more adults, all three of us, you start to see that. I mean, sure. You know, having family members with addictions, if you see that, you just see that people are only going to get help when they really feel like they need it.
But Theo, Matt, you guys have been in this business for a while. You know, I mean, you have friends and people you know. I mean,
I've had dark mornings where it's 7 a.m. and I'm partying with people that I don't even know. And then if I met them at 10 a.m. the morning before, I wouldn't even have talked to them.
Me too.
And, you know, it gets, and I can see how it can get extremely scary for some people.
Oh, God.
One last question I had was, do you feel like Scott's music, you know, because there is this romanticism to, like, you know, these pained artists and these pained hearts that show up in the world,
sure,
which it sounds like he was, and maybe like Kurt Cobain was, like, similar type of character. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like we would have had as good a music if Scott might not have had the demons that he did have inside of him? Would he have created such beauty?
That's an interesting question, and definitely affected, like, his later work for sure, kind of when he got caught in the throes of addiction. And listen, there is no better job for being an addict than rock and roll.
Yeah.
You can hide it all day long. Wow. You can hide it for a long time. The first record, Core, which is one of my favorite records they put out, I don't think Scott was a full-blown heroin addict then. You know, I know he liked to party and probably did his fun things, but, you know, he was probably partied like we did back in the day.
Yeah.
And so that mind made some beautiful art. So I think Scott was always destined for greatness. The talent was too great, you know, and his heroes, David Bowie, you know, John Lennon, you know, he learned from the best, and he was a great songwriter. Some of his phrasing and his tonality was
beautiful.
Incredible. So to answer your question, Theo, I absolutely think he still would have been great no matter what. You know, but I think it is true for some artists that it is a catalyst. You know, it is the motivator, which is a drag, man. But hey, you know, this is the art.
Yeah.
The art.
While we're on that subject, I'm gonna ask real quick: do you see the Kurt Cobain documentary that's on Netflix?
There's a couple, right? Montage of Heck.
The one where he may not have killed himself.
Is that soaked in bleach or something like that? I haven't seen because I've heard it's so sensationalistic. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Oh, is it that sensationalistic? Yeah, that's the only one that I've seen. Oh,
okay.
So far.
I thought Montage of Heck was awesome.
I thought it was phenomenal.
I gotta watch
so
that.
You
the insight into that,
those videos.
My God, I felt like a voyeur. I was just like peeking in on their lives.
You must have met him and spent.
I never met him.
Really?
No. He died before anything really happened with Sugar Ray.
Huh.
Obviously a huge fan.
Yeah.
You know, but no, never got the chance to meet him.
So now,
Courtney, I've met a bunch of times.
Define met.
Define Courtney?
Yeah, define Matt. Well, did you ever hook up with Courtney?
No, I've never hooked up with Courtney, but I've partied a few times. Would I have?
Yeah.
Maybe back in the day to say, you know, maybe I'd find a guitar pickup in there or something. You know, I kid.
No, look, it's bro. You know she definitely saying? Gives I mean, off listen, that vibe, dude.
You know, she's a lot of fun. I mean, she's a compelling figure.
Oh yeah,
great on your podcast.
Yeah. I told a story about her not too long ago.
We'd love to have her.
Looking back at your days, in the partying days and whatnot, looking at the positive side, is there a story that pops out to you like we tell stories, or something that you remember as? I can't believe this fucking happened to me story.
Yeah.
Like of something of the rock star life, something that pops in your head.
God, you know, it's funny when people go, hey, what's the craziest story?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm not going to tell you because it's going to make me insane. People are going to fucking jail. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I have more of my stories are like what great memories I had, you know, and that were surreal.
Yeah. Right.
You know, we opened for the Rolling Stones in 1999.
Damn.
Okay. Every morning was number one on the charts. Okay. Gosh. And I'm singing every morning. And like the Rolling Stones audiences are a little difficult. They're like Metallica audiences. They're not looking for a band to open for their heroes.
Their lords. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, exactly. And so it took us a while to get them going. And they're kind of like, what's these douchebags doing opening for the Stones? But we were breaking them down. We had a couple of hits. We had Fly. You know, we hit them with Fly. And then we hit them with Every Morning, which was number one the week we opened for the Rolling Stones. And so I'm doing the song. We're winning over the audience. And I look over and there's Mick and Keith watching. and just, wow, you know, like bobbing their heads along like that. And I just go, this is the most surreal moment. I don't think it's going to get any better than this right here.
Wow.
And it never did. You know, I mean, I was fully aware of it at the
and
time.
And it never did.
You know, and so that was an incredible moment, that. So I have moments like that.
Yeah, yeah, of
moments
course.
Moments like, you know, doing a line of cocaine off, you know, Courtney Love's ass. Nah.
Didn't happen. But do, like on that. The flip side, do you have
an... It did happen. It did.
On the flip side, do you have any... Do you remember your lowest moment in Hollywood?
Yeah, I do. I had a bad spell years ago. We did these shows, these corporate shows, and I had partied with Kid Rock the night before, and I just got really. I mean, I think I
huge Kid Rock fan.
Yeah, Kid Rock's awesome. I mean, what a great guy
and a partier.
And he's a fun guy to hang out with. And I'd partied all night long, and then I went to this corporate show the next day. We were doing a series in different cities. We started in Chicago, partied in the plane to New York, partied all day.
And this is like a corporate gig is like
your corporate gig,
which yeah. means
corporate gig is no cussing, no nothing,
and you're performing for like
20
employees
people, and it's like kind of a some can be a little bit of a sterile environment. This wasn't because it was in a club, but I don't remember being on stage.
Wow. Really?
And I said some, you know, things, you know, that I shouldn't have said, and this was really high paying corporate gigs,
right.
And they fired our fucking ass that day, and we didn't get to finish the final three.
Oh.
And I felt so bad, and they were such high paying gigs, and my band hated me, and I woke up, it's one of those days you wake up and you know you fucked up bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't know what you did.
Yeah.
And you don't, and that's the worst. You yeah. know you have a list of apologies to make, but you don't even know who to apologize to.
Wow.
And so you slowly go call a tour manager.
And, where do I start?
And then you're, dude, you fucked off last time. I'm like, no, and I knew I did. And so you have to get the stories, and he gives you pieces, and like,
wow.
And I was hearing what happened, man. And that's, I feel really ashamed about that. I yeah. still do. It's hard to bring it up and talk about it because.
Sorry.
No, but I
want people, I mean, you know, that was a really bad, and I'm not like, you know, I'm not even going to say the client, stuff like that.
No.
But that's what we learn from, dude, and
well,
that's why I asked.
Whether we do or don't, I certainly did. You know, that was kind of, it's funny, we said the changing point when I went to Extra, but that was a big changing point for
yeah.
me. It's like, look, this untethered, freeform party guy, it's got to stop.
Yeah.
You can't look. Being in a band's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. You know what I mean? You got to show up.
Oh yeah.
You got to take a lot. There's a lot of traveling involved. And
you got sound check that pisses you off when you need a nap. That you know you've been traveling all day, all night.
Know, that's right.
Not
and
only
there's interviews
that.
To do. And like, by the way, man, we were a commodity for Atlantic Records, and we were like a fourth quarter product and all that. And that's when like the realization became like this fun party thing. I got to take it more seriously. So it was a blessing, but I feel a little embarrassed.
And you had the title of Sexiest Rock Star in 1998.
1998 was a slow year.
That is
a slow year for rock stars.
That is
my
title you have to hold.
Competition with Steve from Smash Mouth, so I think I'm cool. I love you, Steve. You know, I love you.
I have this question. So, did you feel odd because you kind of, I'm not saying you went from a rocker to a host,
mm-hmm.
but like I've hosted like shows, like I hosted a show for Howie Mandel for a couple years mm-hmm. recently and worked on Yahoo News every day for
yep.
2.5 years, which I never saw coming in my life because my comedy's edgy. But did you feel like going from a rocker to a host that some people in your industry, maybe in rock and roll, could probably see that as kind of a bitch move, you know,
yeah.
not to,
no, absolutely.
But you know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
Did you feel that way or no? Well, did you feel like you had to defend yourself, like was
and
that
going
weird?
Along with that, and did you feel like you had to let go of, you know, the band stuff and the rock star stuff?
Yeah, I mean, yes and yes to both of those questions. Yes, there was a sort of there was a little bit of fallout and feedback that like, dude, you're selling out, blah blah blah,
right?
You know, and yes, I had to let go of some of the band stuff. But I was at a time when I was ready to. Yeah, I was 36 when I went to Extra. I wasn't 22.
Right.
I wasn't Kurt Cobain. I wasn't. If Eddie Vedder went and hosted Extra, that'd be fucking crazy. You know what I mean? So the band kind of was at its. The band was kind of going down the other side of the mountain now.
Yeah.
You know, the Smash Mouse, the Third Eye Blinds of the world.
Yeah.
We're kind of falling out of favor at radio. We weren't selling as much records.
Right.
Our fraternity of bands weren't from the 90s, and the industry as a whole wasn't. I had hosted a few things through MTV and award shows, so I was hosting things. And I was kind of doing a few things, so it wasn't so out of left field for me, at least, but I see how people perceived it as such. So to me, it was sort of a natural progression, and some of the guys in my band had said, listen, we want to slow down. They were having kids. We don't want to do another record, go on another tour right away. And I said, great. So I literally looked at some phone calls I had to return, and one of them was Extra. And I thought, I'd just take a meeting. That was, I didn't know what I was getting into.
Yeah.
And I literally took that meeting on a Friday, and 2 weeks later, I was hosting a nationally syndicated entertainment news program.
Wow.
Now, if I knew what I was getting into, then I would have never taken the job.
Wow.
I had no idea what it entailed. And Matt knows, I was very protected at Extra. I signed up to be the host, and that's what I told them I was going to do. But that job is so much more than just hosting.
Right.
Yeah. It is going through your Rolodex and hustling publicists and saying, how do I get on a plane with
You're
Tom Cruise? To China,
hats.
Mission Impossible 2. And it's like, I didn't know it. I didn't know it was a hustle game. And I was completely insulated from that. But, you know, being sort of aware, self-aware, I found out what the game was about.
Yeah. Right.
And in retrospect, I found out how great they were to me at Extra. And I'm still very appreciative of that. But there was definitely fallout from people. But, you know, to me, I don't really care.
Right.
You know,
this is my life.
It's my life. I was honored to have that job. It was a lot of fun, and I met some great people. But, you know, being in Sugar Ray, to me, I thought people would think it was less of a jump and say I was in Cannibal Corpse or Metallica or Slayer.
Right.
That would be kind of weird to have Tom Araya hosting Slayer.
That would be awesome.
And I'd been doing a lot of hosting, and I was even the Rock and Jock host for a little bit at MTV. So to me, it wasn't that out of left field, but I understand it. And the band, to me, didn't stop then, though it kind of did just organically.
Right.
Because it just, no one was really looking for a new Sugar Ray record anyway. So it just kind of worked for me. But there was a little bit of feedback. And
was that hard to accept, the idea that nobody's looking for another Sugar Ray?
No, because I like I was saying about being self-aware and being self-effacing.
Yeah.
I'm the first guy to make fun of me and the band, and always done it better than anybody, so I'm going to try anyway. the writing was completely on the wall for me then.
Right.
I took the job. Look, if we had sold 10 million copies of our last record before I went to meet with that, I wouldn't have met with that.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, the writing was on the wall. That you know, it's slowing down,
pragmatic.
And we were slowing down.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a perfect storm of a great time to take a job. And that's what I did.
Right.
Do I regret taking that job at Extra? Absolutely not.
Right.
I had a great time. I met great people, and I have a set of tools in my back pocket called hosting skills that I get to take out of me.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's cool.
By the way, you know, he was on Celebrity Jeopardy, and he is a reigning king.
Really?
Three-time Jeopardy champion.
I saw him on Wife Swap. Well, you did Wife Swap, didn't you? And I loved that.
With Coolio.
It was really interesting.
And someone forgot to tell Coolio, it's not an actual Wife Swap. You're not trying to bang each other's wives, Coolio, which I actually take it as a compliment. But, you know,
that's hysterical.
Like, what did you do to me, Mark? Because I sent her to Vegas. I got to stay at home, you know.
Who sends their wife to Vegas?
To Coolio's house.
Speaking of wife, and I know you and I talked about this before.
Yeah.
You've had some ups and downs with your wife in the public eye, too.
A ton.
What's that like, being in the public eye and having all that shit go back and forth with different things in a relationship?
Well, you know, it's funny. I got signed to Atlantic Records in 1994, and I met my now wife 2 weeks later when I moved to Los Angeles.
Wow.
Now, the last thing I was thinking about moving to Los Angeles as a single, newly signed rock and roll dude is
I gotta get married.
But like, so we, you know, like, by the way, it kind of looks like I was the bad guy and the big wolf, you know, at Big Bad Wolf, but it went both ways. You know, we both kind of, and she was young and a model, and she wasn't trying to meet a guy anyway. She was trying to have fun too. So we both really liked each other, but we weren't treating the relationship with the respect it ultimately now deserves. So we've got this sort of foundation built on a bunch of bullshit, you know, and she's dated some high profile people as well. So I think but the story gets told from my angle because I'm a little bit more of a public person than she is. And I think that's the only reason that I can sort of live with myself, that it wasn't me just treating her like this. You know, she gave as good as she got, you know, it sounds terrible talking about a marriage now with two beautiful twins, but my life's always been dysfunctional. I've done everything backwards, and it worked for me. I don't recommend this for anybody. It's hard sometimes, and the little infidelities, you know, they peak up every now and then and smack you in your head, you know, what it is. You know, watching TV and someone will come on, you're like, just a nice evening. Yeah. Tuesday night, we're in bed watching Housewives or some shit, and something will come on, like a commercial, like, oh, I'm going to get it, and just goes dark immediately. But
She changes the channel.
But she has some people I see every now and then.
Right,
too.
I'm sure it's awkward.
So, so we'd broken up a few times, and about 10 years ago, kind of when I got the extra gig, kind of when
moment.
I started, you know, it was kind of a watershed moment for me. It's kind of when I started becoming an adult, if you will. And a couple years into that, I looked over one day in the morning, I go, you still here? She goes, yeah, you still here? I go, well, you want to give us a real shot? And so ever since then, you know, we started giving it a real shot.
Yeah.
And then we had IVF kids. You know, we had these beautiful twins. friends. And then I'm like, why don't I just wrap this up a little bow? You know, I just wanted to be married and have kids. That was my thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And a couple years ago, we got married. And ever since, it's been great. I think I'm the only guy in the world that got married and nothing changed.
Right.
You know, because I've known her for about 21 years
right.
now.
Wow.
She's my best friend in the world. And thank God we got through all this stuff. So.
No, it's amazing. There's a lot to be said for that.
I'm dying to know who some of these women were that pop on the commercial.
Who they were, Matt. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's
not Courtney Love.
We know that.
It wasn't Courtney Love, but I don't know.
I'm not making you spill. Let's wrap this up soon because okay. I know he's got to get going. But go ahead.
Tell me about an idol that you met that you were just stoked and that they let you down. Was there anybody like that? Because like I'm an Axl Rose fan, but I feel like if I ever met him, I would just not be happy. But that's just the vibe that I get.
No, I know what you mean. Is sometimes you don't want to see the wizard behind the curtain.
Exactly.
You know?
You're unfortunate enough to meet your idol.
Like
that's
Shane McGowan,
saying.
That happened with me too. Actually, man.
Did you meet Shane McGowan?
Yeah, I ended up in his hotel room. Like my buddy knew him, and so he took me to his hotel room. He's this Scottish like rock and roll guy, right?
Legend. He's an Irish.
Irish, sorry.
Irish in the Pogues. Yeah, no. He's
to me, the same. You know, I know the Pogues. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I ended up in his hotel room, right? And his manager.
Awesome, dude. Are you kidding? I'm blown away right now.
His manager had to come in and like bring some blow pretty much into him to get him up out of bed. Like
wow.
We're waiting for him to go to dinner or something, and we're like sitting in his fucking, it was a suite hotel room with a room and a you know, bedroom.
Was his
and
wife there?
No, it was just him. His manager comes in. This is 5 years ago.
Okay.
And then he's like, couldn't understand anything he said. He laughed like
this. Is that the Irish accent?
Yeah. Like a voice of like asphalt.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes, dude. Like fucking two like pieces of granite were fucking in his throat, right?
Wow.
And my buddy's like, my friend's a comedian. And he's like, and my buddy's like, do a little, I couldn't tell if he wanted a Kleenex or what he wanted. My buddy's like, do some fucking jokes for him. So next thing you know, dude, I'm doing 8 minutes in his suite, in his hotel
wow.
suite. He's like,
did he laugh?
He awesome, did that man. A bunch. Wow. I don't know.
Great.
Animals were showing up at the windows. It's like a mating call.
Wow.
This man had come out of him.
By the way, guys like that never die.
Yeah.
He'll never die.
Yeah.
And he's been a legendary partner for
F years. Is all. He's got some really, really cool hits, man.
Oh, he's the greatest, really cool man. Hits. I love the post.
Is there anybody from you that you had the unfortunate?
I've been very fortunate, you know, and I have just the extreme opposite. And I think I lead like a puppy dog when I meet my fans. I'm just such a fan. I mean, I got to meet Joe Strummer once at a party by my dearly departed friend, Jerry Harrington. Bless you, sir. And he knew everybody. He knew Johnny Ramone and people that I love, the Sex Pistols,
wow.
Clash guys. And I was at a party up at Rick Rubin's house. With Jerry Harrington. Actually, Rick Rubin was there with Jerry Harrington, dropping names.
Yeah.
Like
no, it's
right
okay.
And Joe Strummer was there, and I saw Joe, and I just went, oh my God, dude. I told Jerry, I go, dude, I got to meet him. He goes, come on, Joe, he's the greatest. And Joe is the greatest. Joe's the guy who celebrates life and he loves people. And
like Kiefer Sutherland.
Right, right. He'd go to Glastonbury, these festivals at Reading, and just go as a punter, as a fan, and sit in tents and play music and just be super communal. So he's totally friendly. And he goes, hey, how you doing? He goes, oh, Mark, you knew my name right away.
Wow.
And I go, Joe, all due respect, dude, I know you don't know my band, dude. This was probably 2001. He goes, dude, I have three daughters. They love your music, and I listen to it. You're a good songwriter, man. So Joe Strummer just blessed me
that's
as a
cool.
songwriter.
Yeah, wow.
So I'm trying to rack my
that's
brain
like when,
as I'm telling the story, but I've jammed, like, the Sex Pistols is my all-time favorite band, and then the band that you saw me
yeah,
play
that was
in,
neat.
One day we had the three remaining Sex Pistols,
yeah.
Glenn Matlock, Steve Jones, Paul Cook, and I should say four, because Johnny Rotten wasn't there, but he's still alive, obviously. And the three of them, and I sang a Sex Pistols song with the three Sex Pistols. So I've had great times meeting my idols. Gene Simmons didn't disappoint me, but he was a lot different.
Yeah.
You know, because Gene's just, you know, he's all business, and so you want, you know, you want this.
Yeah,
want
exactly.
Gene Simmons, the rocker dude. So.
And you get the businessman.
He didn't disappoint, but he was different. Yeah.
Well, we should wrap up this. We know we got to go. I'm going to wrap up and ask you one quick question,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is, what's your favorite soundtrack that you're on as Sugar Ray? Because I saw you guys are on a lot of movie soundtracks.
My favorite one was the K-Rock Acoustic Christmas soundtrack we were on a couple
okay.
years ago, because we covered Little Saint Nick, the Beach Boys classic, and it's kind of timely because we're
yeah, yeah,
Christmas.
Yeah.
And the Wilson sisters, Brian Wilson's daughters,
yeah.
Sang the backing harmony, so they're spot on and perfect. And I can do a decent Mike Love impression, so that's my favorite one. You know, soundtracks in the 90s were a way for bands whose songs didn't make their album, they would sell those songs to the soundtracks.
Really?
That was always throwaways. Because
I saw like you're like on the Scream soundtrack,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
it was, and all these movies
That's,
that I was like
that song. We have a song called Rivers on the Scream soundtrack, and it was a tribute to Rivers Cuomo yeah. from Weezer.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
And that was our that was us trying to do a Weezer song.
That's awesome.
Poorly, mind you, but they bought it and put it on the Scream soundtrack, and it's fun because you know they, you know soundtrack sold, you get another gold record. It was fun. A plaque for your wall.
All right, cool. I think we can wrap up round two there.
Okay, I just gotta know this, dude. How much chicks does Dave Navarro get? That dude seems like he gets more chicks than anybody in the world. I know that's a weird question.
By the way,
question.
You weren't going to say chicks. I can tell that.
It's not one bit of a weird question, and Theo, more than anybody you know.
Yeah.
Maybe Prince has a similar effect
right.
on people. I see Dave Navarro walk in a room, and guys and girls,
yeah.
anybody.
He does
He's
it
just
for me.
A sexual being.
Yeah.
And if you look him in the eyes too long, you're fucked.
You're fucked. Dude, I saw him take a woman that he just had just seen into a bathroom.
And, wow. and guess
like,
what happened?
In front of me.
He does that to everybody.
Yeah.
Do not leave your girlfriend or your wife in a room with Dave Navarro. She's going to get
or
fucked.
Or boyfriend?
Anybody.
I don't think so.
Yeah, Dave doesn't really get down like that. I know he's
He might watch from a distance, though, because he's fucking, he's just erotic.
He's erotic. He's down. He's down. You know, he is a slayer of the female persuasion. I've been around a ton of rock stars and a ton of movie stars. I've never seen one with the prowess and the follow through. Like you said, he will be banging someone in the bathroom 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Wow.
And first of all, that's impossible to do. And second of all, the chicks just resign to it. It's okay. And everybody's happy. No one's angry. Everybody goes on their merry way. Everybody knows
thing.
What they're in for.
Yeah. Wow. Nobody's, it's almost
no
like,
no one's angry.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's amazing.
That takes a lot of work to get to that
point.
I feel like you'll see a
bride coming down the aisle and then he'll creep out from under her dress and nobody's upset. Like, do you see Dave Navarro?
Right. Even the groom's like, I understand. I get it. It's cool.
I do.
By the way, I learned at that event, his favorite TV show is Survivor.
Really?
He loves it. He knows it inside out and he would do it.
I didn't know that.
Dave Navarro, we connected on that.
Wow.
Survivor.
He'd be a really good Survivor.
He'd be great.
He's really smart. I mean, it's funny about Dave. People have the wrong sort of public opinion of him because we all know his veneer is kind of like, you know, dark and all that.
Yeah.
But Dave is one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet.
Wow.
Fully outgoing. I mean, he's got a little shell you need to crack. He's not trying to make new friends every day.
Right.
But once you get in there, he's one of the loveliest guys you ever met. And he just released a documentary called Morning Sun.
About his
mother was murdered in 83.
No way.
And it was big news in Los Angeles. And there's a ton of footage about it. And this documentary called Morning Sun, I implore you to check it out if you love documentaries.
It's well done, too.
It's very well done. And what the gist of it shows him kind of revisiting all the sites where it happened. And then he and his buddy, Todd Newman, who made the film, traveled to San Quentin to meet the guy who murdered his mother. And this was his mother's boyfriend who lived with Dave and his mom. Wow. And Dave was unexpectedly at his father's house that day. He was supposed to be home with the mom.
And he might have died, too.
And he would have died, for sure, because he killed his mother's friend, who was home, too, as well. So.
And on that note, you have to pick a winner.
You know, screeching halt on that one.
You got to pick a winner in round two.
God, you guys are both really good and, like, really scratched the surface. You bummed me out.
I'm sorry.
Cry. You made me laugh.
No, you brought great energy.
Full range of emotions. See, I'm just going to have to go with Matt with this one, dude. You know what I mean?
Understandable.
It's real close.
Matt's great.
I feel like we're all friends.
Especially since you switched on me with the first round.
Yeah, so I'm going to say right now it's one all. Because right now it is truly one all.
Let me just recommend, so I don't forget to recommend this. CBGB is on Netflix now. If you like all those bands, they're all...
CBGB is a great movie.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Oh, you already saw it?
Yeah, yeah,
cool.
I saw it. Yeah,
okay.
Really good.
Alan Rickman.
I've never seen it. It was great.
Alan Rickman's really good as Hollywood.
I just saw it yesterday.
This is round three where we'll pick a topic for debate.
Yeah.
And then we'll each have a minute to go for it, and then you have to pick a winner.
God, you guys, you put me in a bad position. I like you both. I feel like you guys are bummed if someone wins. I don't like you'd put the guest as the arbiter of your talents.
Well,
but anyway.
I think you can man up.
Bro, you sent your wife to Vegas to Coolio's.
I stand corrected. You're right, Theo.
Jesus Christ. I don't even have a wife. I wouldn't do anyone that. Even
That's
my
true.
Worst enemy. Onward.
Debate topic.
Yep, you want to go first?
The choice of Coldplay as the Super Bowl halftime show this year for number 50.
I love the Coldplay Super Bowl halftime topic. So.
Okay.
And this is interesting because I actually went to TMZ a couple days ago and this was a big topic.
Yeah.
Because so the people don't know, Coldplay was picked as the halftime performer.
And if you don't know by now,
yeah, you do.
I mean, come on.
It's Gwyneth Paltrow's husband.
Yes.
Yeah.
for the 50th Super Bowl.
Right.
That I didn't know.
I didn't know that either. And that puts a little bit of
a lot of pressure. And now there are people who like Coldplay and there are people who hate Coldplay. Mm-hmm. Just like there are people who love U2 and there are people who hate U2. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Half the people in the world hate you that are listening and half the people love you.
Exactly.
Welcome to the world.
Completely. This is true. So you want to go first or me?
You can go first. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you can go first.
Okay, great. I will say that I think I'm going to say no. I'm going to say I don't think you go with Coldplay because as weird as it is, dude, we live in a very corporate world, so I'm shocked by this pick because a lot of people don't know who Coldplay is, dude. Like, if you ask, like, a lot of rednecks or, like, people who are, like, you know, have five or six children, they probably don't know who Coldplay is, dude. You know, like, people who live on the same street as their parents, those people don't know who Coldplay is, right? And so those are a lot of your fans. Those are a lot of your Miller Lite drinking, Super Bowl
NASCAR
watching, light spousal abuse, you know, if their team doesn't win, fans. And I don't think that they're going to be stoked to see Coldplay, you know? Like, I mean, they snuck through Katy Perry on us, you know, and I don't think that, you know, and I know I'm starting to sound a little redneck here, but we got to steer clear from this Coldplay,
those women,
man.
And those British.
Dude, Coldplay, I feel like it's the Hillary Clinton, and we don't need it right now.
Wow. All right. Dude. I am a huge fan of Coldplay. I'm a fan of their music. I think they have great music. Not only that.
Hopefully. That's why you're a fan.
Yeah. No, not only that, I met Chris Martin once, and I got him to call my brother on the phone, which is such a horrible thing to do to a celebrity, but he did it, and he did it, so I will forever be in his debt, because my brother's a huge fan. And I think they are, you know, there are people who don't like the music, and I get it, but I think they are just as entertaining, if not more, in my opinion, than some of the other people. I mean, granted, it's not the Rolling Stones. You know, you can't have the Rolling Stones every year. You can't have Bruce Springsteen every year. It's just, to me, as entertaining as Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake. In fact, I think this Coldplay will even bring in a different, like, I'm more interested in watching the Super Bowl to see Coldplay.
Interesting.
Even though I don't know nothing about Super Bowl, and I'm not going to watch it, probably, period.
That's a minute. Wrong, but interesting.
Well, first of all, Theo.
It's football, right?
Yeah. Saying people don't know who Coldplay is, dude, I mean, here's a band that plays stadiums around the world.
Right.
Okay? They play arenas in every city they go to in America, trust me, and sometimes multiple dates. So I do believe that they are a band that qualifies to play the Super Bowl.
Yes. Right.
Now, do they play the 50th Super Bowl of America's game, football?
Right.
That's right. The Coldplay argument kind of...
Are they from another country?
Yeah, they're British.
Are you
they
serious?
They are?
Yeah.
No way. Then definitely you don't have them play America's game, dude.
You didn't know they were from England?
No, I didn't.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the guy sounds kind of regular.
Do you know what continent England is on?
I'm yes, dude. One of the big seven.
And I will say the Coldplay, since they play stadiums around the world, we'll put on a great show. And they got a lot of songs people know. He's gotten off the piano now, so he kind of does his Bono thing up front. So he knows how to entertain a little bit.
Jesus.
There are people...
But I hate the choice of Coldplay at the Super Bowl.
Yep.
I don't like the choice. I don't like it. I can already see the show. I know what they're going to do. And that, to me, isn't fun for a halftime show.
Wow.
It's like getting disappointed in a commercial you think is going to be great.
Really?
So I have a personal... I've got a horse in this race, you know, so I, me personally, you're never going to win the argument to me, the Coldplay. It wasn't that his was stronger. I've just got a personal bias.
Because you don't like them personally or because
no,
you don't think it's right for them?
I think they're fine.
So who would you like?
I'd like to see the reunited Guns N' Roses in the 50th Super Bowl.
That's what I'm talking about.
Argue against that pick.
Yeah, but that would never go over in America these days, you know? Because they want to see Rihanna, they want to see Katy Perry, they want to see Coldplay.
Yeah,
and they do not. You threw Coldplay in there with Katy Perry and Rihanna.
Coldplay
people will deal with that. It's women at halftime, they'll watch
Coldplay
it.
Coldplay is a huge man. I'm going to definitely give you that. That's the only part of Theo's argument I disagree with. But yeah, I just think a reunited, you know, I even think of Billy Joel, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you want a piano? Get their original piano, man.
Yeah, that's
you know?
A good point.
I think Billy Joel would do really good. I really believe that it should be an American artist in our 50th year of the Super Bowl of America's game.
What if Gwyneth Paltrow gets up there and
that would be fantastic.
Right. So who are they going to have to fuse in with them, because they always have alternate bands and groups coming in? Who are they going to have to put in?
Chris Martin's got some heavy hitters.
Yeah,
he's got a Rolodex full of heavy hitters, so
he will
definitely do that. I wouldn't be surprised to see a Mick Jagger, a Bruce Springsteen, a Bono, someone of that caliber. Will definitely, good call on that, and you just hurt your own argument, Theo. Because he's going to bring some party people with him, I'll tell you that.
All right.
That's for sure.
Let's end the podcast with that.
Can I say something? You guys are really great at what you do. Thank you for having me on, man. It's been a pleasure.
You're great, man. This has been a great.
Before you pick a winner, we want to know, you have the band of Merrymakers, right? Is that what you're working on?
Yeah, I was just watching it this morning. It's cool.
Yeah, we just did Kimmel last night.
Yeah, dude.
A couple years ago, friends of mine, Sam Hollander, and who was a super producer. He's done every band.
And a guy from Better Than Ezra, right?
And Kevin
from New Orleans. I partied with those guys before.
LSU.
Amazing dudes.
Best guys. Great guys.
Amazing.
Great band. And super songwriters. Kevin's written, he wrote Suck Like Lou for Sugarland. He wrote Collide with Howie Day. So he's a real working Nashville. He lives in Nashville now. A real songwriter. And a couple years ago, they just, on a 103 degree day in LA, they said, let's write a Christmas song. And they wrote one called It Must Be Christmas. And it got him a record deal on Sony.
Wow.
And it became this thing that's kind of growing and growing and growing. And Kevin and my band toured last summer. And I jumped on a few songs and it became this monster. And we did the Christmas tree lighting.
I know, I saw that.
Yeah, we did the Today Show, we did Kimmel, and we did all these great things.
Kimmel.
And so we built it up, the band of Merrymakers, and hopefully next year we'll go on tour and kind of do a Trans-Siberian Orchestra thing with an indie flair. And there's a record out called Welcome to Our Christmas Party on Sony. So that's what I've been doing. And, you know, Sugar Ray's always making music. It's how I keep the lights on. And,
oh, yeah.
And coming to a county fair near you soon. So, you know.
No, it's great. It seems like it's music for everybody, too, which is cool. You know, now that you have kids and stuff, I'm sure that incorporates into some of your mindset.
Been very blessed that these songs have released so many people. I mean, with their 8-year-old kid comes up to me, or 75-year-old grandma. These songs, they've become, and I hate sounding precious with them, but part of the universe. And once you get number one songs, they mean a lot of things.
Yeah, they do.
Whether you think of me, I get it. But the songs stand on their own. That's what people are coming to see now.
Dude, you're awesome. We love you, too.
I love you guys.
Look, man, one of my favorite stories, and this is a buddy of mine who passed away about 2 years ago of addiction, actually. But we worked together at a piping plant when I was during summers of high school. And we had to just be outside, like, painting glue on the pipes that the main guys were going to put together. We were just getting paid like $7 an hour or whatever.
Grunt work.
But when Fly would come on the radio, the older guys would come out and they'd be like, oh, get all us young bucks, make us go inside and make us dance for all the foremen in the plant. They would make us like young boys. It was almost a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know to be offended by that or like they thought it was so lame, like the Venga Boys was on. That
we would really dance to it. No, we loved it. We loved it. And we would go and dance.
Sounds like one of my fantasies.
And the second it would turn off, they would go right back to welding. Like, wouldn't say so anything. Great. Wouldn't, but
that's,
I mean,
hysterical.
Me and my buddy, that was the, you know, of his life, that is the greatest moment. I remember we probably did that 40 times over the summer.
One of the best stories I've ever heard regarding Fly. That's
there
awesome.
You go, dude.
Yeah, who knew,
it was
man?
Fun, man. My
that's
buddy
awesome.
Billy Mayer, rest in peace. Thank you
Wait,
so
no,
much.
Wait, no, he's got a pick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's got a pick.
Well, like I kind of alluded to it, but I think Matt won the argument for me. You know, I don't like the choice, though I understand why they're there, and I believe they're going to bring some heavy hitters that you kind of made your own argument against yourself for, Matt. So I got to give it to Matt today.
Yay!
2-1. Very close.
Fair. Very close.
Both worthy. If we did this again in an hour, deal
Who
with it.
And that being said, we are sponsored by Dobel Tequila.
Yeah,
you
got so we give you a bottle of Dobel Tequila.
No, I'm not as cool as Dennis Quaid. I'm not going to drink it right now. But I'll drink it all.
Hey,
home.
Man, drink it all, and maybe you'll end up with Courtney Love, dude. Who knows?
Courtney, are you in there? That's awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for coming, and we had such a great time with you, man.
Me too, man. It's an honor, man. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Anytime someone cancels, I'm your man.
Thanks, man.